Hey guys, welcome back to Unleashed. We are so glad you are joining us today. And today we have a special guest, and I want to say he's back for a second time because he is. But it's because the first time we recorded, something got all funky with the recording and we had to scrap it. And that was a couple weeks ago. So a little bit of water's passed under the bridge between then and now. But I think it's going to make it even better today. So let me just kind of start off with, I got a question I want to ask Eric real quick. And now we got two Erics. So let me get that straight today. The producer, Eric Foley, is here. And then our guest today is Eric Horner. And one of them, I'm in a room that's probably about 8 foot by 12 foot.
Yes.
And the other one, who our guest today, I was in a room with him, which was probably about 12 by 16 for about a year when we were in college together. But we'll kind of get into that in just a second. Eric Foley.
Yes, hello.
Good to see you, man.
Nice seeing you.
Yeah, last week was kind of weird. My wife, Stacy, had surgery, so I did the podcast from home last week, and which was interesting not having you there. I'm like, I'm always looking to you for...
Yeah.
All of that good stuff.
I was with you in spirit.
I appreciate it. Stacy, for those of you that don't know, she had some major surgery done a week ago today. And so she's back on her feet again. Still in some pain, but man, just keep praying for her. We appreciate the prayers if you've already put them out. But God's been doing some really neat stuff in the healing process with her. So glad she's back on her feet. Glad we're back together here.
We're back.
So... we didn't go through, we were having a little bit of glitch with some software here again, getting some things straightened out. And we didn't have a question ready for this week, but I want to ask both of you guys a question. And you just kind of come back. And now, both of you guys grew up in church, correct? Mm-hmm. I mean, I said, I'm like, you live there, but you know what I'm saying. Did your church have a men's ministry?
Yes.
Not when I was little, it did.
Not when you were little, okay. And so what did you guys do? Was it more than like flipping pancakes once a quarter?
Yeah.
Was it vibrant?
It was just a meeting.
Just a meeting?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like men's breakfast meeting. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, basically like a men's breakfast. Yep.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, so I always say that because, you know, being with the Unleashed podcast, you know, people say, why is this geared more for men? Because women have been messaging and loving the podcast. It isn't just for men, but that sounds like a product. Just for men.
Just for men.
Just for men. Just for men. But it's, you know, because that's mainly who I speak to. And today's guest has had a chance to do a lot also in doing some music for the U.S. military. And I know there's both men and women in there, but I've seen some of the video footage that today's guest has put up where he's had a chance to go in and speak and sing and stuff with these guys. They all got their arms around each other sometimes. Just powerful scene when you see some of our guys from the U.S. military who are loving God and praising Him. So we'll get into that in just a little bit. So let me just kind of go into today's guest. Eric was a roommate of mine back when we were at, back then it was Anderson College, correct?
It was. Yes, it was.
Yeah, it wasn't the university yet. It was just the Anderson College. And what's really interesting was we ended up, we'll get into this, ended up touring together with a guy that was two doors down in the hallway. And so we spent a lot of time on the road together. And it's so good to have Eric back. And so let me just kind of get into Eric's career. Now, Eric, I'm gonna read this up. You see me kind of looking down. If you're watching this on YouTube, if you see me looking up, it's because my monitor, see Eric's beautiful face, I'm going to say that, is up above here and looking down here is where I'm looking at my words. So anyhow, so here's what I've got that I think will be relevant for you guys to kind of get familiar with Eric. Music has always been a part of his life, and I knew that. We started off with a guy named Stephen Curtis Chapman before the Curtis, and what's interesting is he was your very first guitar teacher.
He was.
We were both. What age did you start?
I was in the sixth grade, and he was a freshman in high school, and his dad owned a music store, and Steve was going to start giving some lessons and teaching the Chapman method. So I was his very first student. So
I love his dad. It was Chapman Music Store, right?
Yeah.
Until just recently. Yeah. Yeah. I just remember going into the store and he had that, you know, that kind of a shorter beard. He used to tease me because he took me to Cracker Barrel for the first time I had ever been to one in my life. We didn't have them up, you know, more northern, and they teased me because I was only one state up. They were in Paducah, Kentucky, and I was up in Indiana, but I was still called a northerner. So we didn't have Cracker Barrel. And the first time we went in, I ordered some milk with my breakfast, and he looked at me and he goes, "Okay, sweet milk," and that became my nickname. So thank you, Herb Chapman Senior. Sweet milk.
Oh, that's great.
But so he was your first guitar teacher. Now you grew up. Did you grow up playing just gospel or country or bluegrass or?
A little bit of everything, but when I actually started playing in groups and stuff like that, it was all gospel. But you know, growing up, I had banjo lessons and so I did some things playing in restaurants where I would just, you know, walk around with my banjo and another guitar player and we'd entertain everybody while they ate kind of thing. But as right. far as when I first started playing in groups, it's always, you know, for a long time, just gospel.
We always joke around when our friend Craig Clope that we have in common, we were talking about when, you know, the move to Nashville and you were talking about walking around playing to all these people, you know, that are like singing or, I mean, eating and stuff. We just said this a couple weeks ago, the quickest way to find a musician in Nashville is waiter.
Yeah, no
everyone's
doubt.
Going down. They got to work somewhere.
No doubt. And there's now, so much amazing talent, you know, that could sing or play us under the table. They just don't know anybody to get the break, you know.
I hadn't seen you after college for a few years. We kind of went different ways. You know, I was touring with a group called One, and then we were with Sandy Patty for about, I think, 5 years. And after right. I left, I was down, and we talked about this, but we'll just kind of go back. I went down to Nashville to cut my first solo CD, record, whatever you wanted to call them back in the 90s. And you were standing outside of a studio on a corner. And that was the first time I had seen you it had been a long time. It was probably a decade since I had seen you. Because we stopped traveling with Steve in, what, 84?
Well, yeah, I you were there longer than I was. But, I was standing in front of Studio 19 when you came by.
Yes, that was
there
it.
There was. Yeah, Studio 19.
And I just remember pulling up and, I mean, if you don't, you can't see Eric. I mean, he's sitting down in a chair, but Eric's a tall guy. How tall are you?
6'4".
Were you? Let's say it that way.
Yeah, 6'4".
Was. Yeah, he's a pretty big guy. And we pulled up and I saw him. I rolled down the window. I don't even know what I said. I did something to try to harass you to get your goat going. And you kept walking over like, what are you talking to here? And I, anyhow. But so after you grew up, we went to college together, and I just... One of my best memories of you would be, you know, he had his guitar out and he had, I think it was a Rockman or something in where you couldn't hear, but you have it plugged in. And he would turn on Maniac and he would be playing that solo, which is an incredible. Was it Michael Cimbello that wrote that?
Yeah.
And he would practice that over and over. So I knew how much talent you had because I got to hear you all the time. And after those years of touring with Steven, you went down to Nashville a few years later. And just kind of tell us a little bit of your journey, like when you kind of went down, or maybe after I got done seeing you, how your journey kind of progressed to where, you know, where you are now.
Sure. Actually, Stephen got me my first job in country music. He and Herbie performed at a place called Opryland for a while. And, right. of course, Opryland, a lot of the performers that came out of there, some of them ended up with record deals. And there was a four-girl quartet. That had worked with Steve at Opryland in the Country Music USA show there. And they had a record deal on MTM Records. Mary Tyler Moore opened a label here. And at that time, Trisha Yearwood was the receptionist at the place. It's been a long time ago.
Oh, wow.
But they, Steve knew these girls, and they were starting to tour and getting ready to release a radio single. And they needed, at the time, a bass player. And so they were doing a lot of... At that time, they were still, you know, having to play the, you know, clubs and casinos and all that, you know, in that genre. And so they were doing a lot of hopped up, like Pointer Sisters music. So they needed somebody that could play funk bass. And I went and auditioned and they hired me. And so I was with them for a little while. And then changes happened in the band and I ended up being the guitar player. And we became, the girls had a little success with their first couple of singles. They had the first one was a top 20, I think, and the second one made top 10 on Billboard, and so they got them a spot with Lee Greenwood as an opening act, and so that introduced me to Mr. Greenwood and all of his, you know, crew and band and all of that. And Nashville, when it was smaller, it's just unbelievable now how it's changed since I started. But there was kind of a grapevine community amongst musicians. And you would hear, you know, through the grapevine, hey, this job's becoming available, or that job's becoming available. And Lee was, Mr. Greenwood was, he had different ideals about what he wanted in a band. And they changed often. At one time, he wanted a short band of all African-American gentlemen to play. He wanted to play R&B. And then it changed that he wanted everybody, he wanted a rock and roll band. Now he's playing country music. And so he hired all these guys that looked like Whitesnake up there playing, you know. And I had heard the guitar player he hired, there was a song called If There's Any Justice that he was going to release as a single. And I guess it's kind of a difficult acoustic guitar part to play. Acoustic guitar is kind of my main thing. And this guy kept flubbing it on the road. And so word was out, he was out. You know, he was going to, you know, Lee was going to make a change. And so I tracked Lee down at the Opryland Hotel. He was over there doing a private show. I saw his buses pulled up to the hotel. So I went and found his road manager and told him that, hey, I heard this job's becoming available. If it really is, I'd like to audition. So he took me to Lee, and Lisa gave me his home address. He said, here, be at my house at 10 o'clock in the morning, and we'll see what you can do. Well, when I got to his house, it was like a beehive. There were like 20 people running around doing this, that, and the other thing. And so I did. He sat me down by the piano. He said, just wait here, and I will audition as soon as I can cut free, you know, as soon as I get free. So I sat down. I started noodling around on the guitar, and I started playing the intro to If There's Any Justice. And he peeks his head around the corner, and it says, play that again. And so I played it. He said, you're hired. And he gave me his office address. And so I went and filled out the paperwork, and I started shortly thereafter. Spent 5 years with him. And then I decided, well, hey, I think I want to chase a record deal myself. And so I got out and started doing that thing, you know, that everybody has to do. And I was playing all these places and you know, trying to get some interest from some labels. And you know, I got close a couple of times, but it finally became evident that that was not going to happen for me. And I kind of settled into becoming a session player on acoustic guitar. And I was enjoying that because I was at home in my own bed every night. And, you know, just I thought right. That's what I was going to do the rest of my life. And Mr. Greenwood called me one day. There's about a 5-year break between the times I've worked for him twice, two different 5-year periods. And this was in 2000. 99 going into 2000. He had a theater. He had opened a theater over in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. And he said, man, he said, this theater's driving me crazy. He said, I can get away for about 15 to 20 days a year. And they can do a show without me here. He said, would you put me together a band? Let's do a few road dates just for fun, you know? And so I did. I got a guy by the name of Gordon Moat. I'm sure you're familiar with him. He's amazing and keyboard player. And so we put together this kicking band. And so we were out, you know, just 15, 20 dates a year. It wasn't interfering with my session career. All was good. And then 9/11 happened. And every entertainer in the world was being canceled except Mr. Greenwood. Every genre, they wanted Lee. They didn't have any clue about his hit songs or how many he'd had, but they wanted to hear God Bless the USA.
Yeah,
and so,
right.
I mean, we worked 200 and some odd days that year. Of course, my session career went away. When the phone rings, they call, you're not there. They don't call anymore. And so I ended up staying for, I intended on staying a year and ended up being there 5 years. And in that fifth year, I just felt like the Lord was saying, hey, you're using your gifts in the wrong arena. I didn't give them to you for that. And I really felt a calling for full-time ministry, and I argued with the Lord for a year about that, because I was Mr. Greenwood's band leader. That was a good job. I owned a recording studio. That was a good job. I had a contract that paid me to write songs. That was a good job. And I was still playing some sessions. And I said, Lord, don't you have anybody else? And I just the thought of stepping away from everything I'd worked so hard to build, because it's a pretty good living. But after a year, I said, okay, Lord, I'm going to do this. And I talked to my wife about it, and she laughed at me when I brought it up. She said, what took you so long? She knew that the Lord was dealing with me about this. And so I told Mr. Greenwood what I was going to do, and he was very supportive. To this day, he still is. And we are in our 21st year of full-time touring music ministry. And the one thing, if you can give the Lord stipulations, like you can, but I just said, Lord, if I'm going to do this, I want to do this where I don't care a thing about fame. I don't care a thing about I don't want to go out there and try to be famous for Jesus. You know, I want to make you famous, and I want to see lives changed. And he was very faithful to allow me to do that. And he's put stuff before us that I never dreamed I'd get to do. You know, a lot of stuff that, you know, is reserved for celebrities. I've gotten to sing for a president. I've got to sing for, probably 400,000 or better of our newest and finest as they've gone through basic training. And I got to see so many of them. You know, we did a lot of different stuff in that arena. It wasn't all just ministry. We had a thing called a victory concert that was rock and roll patriotic stuff that I'd written for those kids to speak to what they'd just gone through in their basic training. And so we would do that stuff. And veterans events, but the chapel services were the deal, man. That, you know, that was their 1 hour and a half away from their drill sergeant, and they were ready to have church. And
honestly, I was moved when I saw that video of all those soldiers, and you were there with their arms around each other. It was just,
I'm telling you, man, when I would, and I was very blessed, you know, because our chaplains in the military come from every walk of life, every denomination, and most, all 90% of the time, I had one that was a real soul winner. And they said, yes, you can have an invitation. And so what I would do is, you know, we'd have anywhere from, you know, 200 to 500 soldiers in a room. And so I'd bring a team of counselors with me. And I always had a pastor because I'm not educated for some of the stuff we ran into. We ran into some stuff that blow your mind and break your heart.
I'll bet.
But when I would give an invitation, there'd be nothing for 50, 60, 70 of those kids to respond. And, it, you know, some for salvation, some wanted to, you know, follow Christ. But so many of them, just the prayer requests that you would get, things like, hey, pray for my family. Mom and dad were just taken to prison on drug charges, and child services took my little brother. I can't tell you how many of those things we ran into. And so it was just an amazing opportunity to just kind of be the hands and feet of Jesus to those who put their name on the dotted line and promised to defend my freedom even if it cost them their life. I mean, that was huge.
You know, when you were talking about, you run into stuff like that, you know, like mom and dad went to prison, you know, family members pass away, you know, brothers in the military, you know, lose their lives, you know, sacrificing the ultimate sacrifice. Ministry, whether it be in music ministry, whether it be like Eric down here at the Christian Center, you know, working with guys, whether it be out on the road, like speaking to like the game dinners and stuff that I do, it is tough, because if you're doing ministry, you're going to run into people that are hurting, and they're looking for something to help calm that storm that's going on the inside. I mean, I'll just tell you this, Eric, right before I came in here today, and I shared with the producer here, Eric, you know, as I walked in, I was still messaging a guy, and it's not out on the news yet, so I have to be careful what I say, but there's been a really bad accident. I'm not going to say what state it was in, because they're still having some issues, but it was a semi and a bus, and it was preschoolers.
Oh my gosh.
And there was a number of lives lost, and he knew some of the family that were the parents of some of these kids. And wow. You know, when you're doing ministry, your heart gets broken.
Yes.
Social workers, a lot of times too, they're coming home at night, or whether you're, you know, I did a lot of, you know, coaching and therapy with people, but you're bringing those stories home, and you're not human if it doesn't weigh on your heart. It does, because you wonder sometimes, what would you be feeling if you went through what they've gone through?
Right.
And so, you know, sometimes you can relate because you've been through things. Sometimes all you can do is just be an ear and give them a hug, you know. And Eric, your music ministry is so powerful. And, you know, later today I'm going to have you sing us out when we go with a song that has meant a lot to me. And I know it does to you, too. So I'm just kind of going back here. When you first started in I'll say Mr. Greenwood Lee, as you first called him, peeked his head around the corner and you were playing the acoustic, and he was like, hey, do that again. I can remember when I first started being a session singer in the studio back in around 84, 85. I can still remember one of the very first lines that I had to sing for my audition in the studio. Can you remember on acoustic what you played?
For Mr. Greenwood?
Yeah.
It was a... Let me tune down. It was just a little, it's just a little like.
Yeah.
I got
What are you playing? What is that?
That is a Collins.
What guitar are you playing?
Collins.
That's got a nice tone.
Yeah, I love this. Steve turned me onto these. I love these.
No, those Foster Bronze. What are you playing?
Foster Bronze.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like. And they sound pretty new.
Yeah, yeah. You know, in my country music days, when I was, you know, in the thick of that, endorsements were for everybody. I mean, if you were on a big stage, you get anything you wanted. Takamine used to give me guitars like crazy. And the one endorsement that I've kept throughout all these years, it's not free anymore, but it's really cheap, is I use Ernie Ball strings. And I can still call them and order a case of those things for just pennies on the dollar, you know, so.
Well, I was listening to that just now. I was like, yeah, I kind of recognize that. Yeah. Well, let's go back. So you were with, Lee for how many years total now?
Total of 10.
And so when, and here's something else that our listeners don't know yet, you also play with a lady they might have been familiar with or sang with her, and that would have been Shania? Oh, yeah.
Shania? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, come on. You know, every guy knows Shania.
It was kind of a short-lived thing, and the reason it was is all we did was television. She didn't know I played the guitar, which was a beautiful thing. All I had to do is stand up and sing, you know?
And you had the big hair.
Oh, gosh. I had enough to put in a basket. There used to be a video on YouTube, and I think it got pulled because of copyright. For some reason, they pulled it. But it was a video of us on the Letterman show back in 95. And, I mean, I did. They called my hair the Kentucky waterfall. There's a bunch of it in the back of it.
I can remember that because I remember Letterman just looking at her almost like with his jaw dropped. Yeah.
Well, that was her first time on the show, and she walked out and announced to everybody in these britches that looked like they'd been painted on her. That's country, ain't it, britches?
Yeah.
And she announced that they were being held together in the back by what, a safety pin? And so Letterman's eyes never left her.
You know your country when you say britches. What is that? Okay, can you use which digit in a sentence? This is how you know your country.
Which digit?
Which digit?
I ain't followed you.
You didn't bring your truck with you, did you?
With you. Oh, with you. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or if you're going to go over to your neighbor's house, I'm going to go over yonder right quick.
Right. Now, is it a creek or crick or?
Across the creek, man.
Across the creek. And acorns instead of acorns.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know what? We went to lunch today. And I didn't mean to say it like this, but we got a little diner in our little town where we live. Our little town is outside of Nashville. It's a four-way stop. And it's a little country diner. It's really good country cooking. And I was ordering my sides to go with my fried pork chop. And I said, I have some of that okra. Fried okra. Ain't no I on the end of okra. Okra.
Oh, my word.
It's just in me.
Even my wife, Stacy, was pointing something out that I say differently. And she was like, you say that word different. And I'm like, I didn't think that Indiana and Pennsylvania have a difference, but they do. And so I've kind of picked up a little bit of both. Here's what's funny. Like, if you're from Pennsylvania, at least on more the western side, you will end a lot of your sentences like a question. Like, you guys go into the store. It'll be like the question, like at the end, like you kind of go up at the end. I don't know what that's all about, but
yeah, my daughter lives in Chicago, and so she's for me, and you know, when we talk, she'll say either, I say either, neither, neither. You know, I drive her crazy. I know I do. Sometimes
my mom grew up. My mom grew up on the north eastern side of Pennsylvania, up near Scranton, which was almost like a New York kind of an accent. You want some water? You know, So you were on the road with them, and then let me think. I'm trying to remember. Now, weren't you with Wynonna Judd for a little bit?
What I did with them was I just finished up a little part of a tour. A fellow that I moved to Nashville to play guitar for me from Branson, Missouri. I moved him here just off of a recommendation back when I was, you know, playing the road dates myself. And when I heard him play, I thought, oh, I won't keep him very long. And Wynonna snapped him up pretty quick. And when his little girl was being born, he needed some time at home off the road. And so he called me to go out in his place with her. That was the best band I've ever played with. I mean, they had some heavy hitters. They had Jim Horn playing saxophone. And if you start listening back through the songs from the Wrecking Crew, he was on the Wrecking Crew and played on a lot of huge hit songs.
I can remember Steven, you know, we'd be in the van and he'd always have like his headphones on if somebody else was driving, and he'd be, you know, practicing guitar nonstop. I mean, that's why you guys are, you know, as talented as you are, because that was an extension of almost like of you.
Yeah.
And I can remember him always talking about how good Ricky Skaggs and B.B. King were.
Yeah.
And then as his career would go on, I got to see him, you know, play with both of them.
Yeah.
I mean, they were on the same stage together doing that. Was so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Weird thing. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to tell you, been a couple of years ago now. First time Stephen and I've got to sing together in 38 years. I went, we had a benefit in Paducah, in our hometown, for the little town of Mayfield, Kentucky, that was decimated by a tornado.
Oh, yeah.
And Steve got, you know, brought a bunch of Kentucky boys and did this big benefit. He brought in Larry Stewart, which lead singer for Restless Heart. He's from Paducah. He brought in Jason Crabb from the Crabb family. Of course, he's from Owensboro, Kentucky. And of course, Skaggs is from Kentucky. And just a bunch of Kentucky guys coming together. And I was there that night, and he had me come up and sing a part of a song we're going to end with today with him. And it was the first time Stephen and I have sung together in 38 years, but it was so great to hear Ricky's band. They were the backup band for everybody. And to hear them play Steve's songs, you know, with that Skaggs band flair, was the, I think they call them Kentucky Thunder is the name of the band. But boy, it was incredible. It really was. And of course, Steve did a lot of his bluegrass stuff. With Bluegrass record. It was great. It was great.
You know, I was searching. This has been, I don't know how many years ago now, at least a decade. I was going through, like, YouTube, and you know, the NAMM show, when everybody's, you know, walking around, you know, some of the greatest players. And I think it was the NAMM show. Steve did, was it Taylor he was sponsored by?
Yeah, he did a lot of stuff for Taylor.
I think it was for Taylor. And he did, what's that song,
Lord of the Dance, yeah.
Lord of the Dance.
I don't know how he
and
came.
I watched he and his boys were off to the side, you know, kind of doing the beatbox and doing some stuff, and I was watching him play that. Holy cow.
Yeah.
I mean, he was nails. If you guys get a chance to go on to YouTube and look up Stephen Curtis Chapman and look up that. Did you ever learn any of that stuff?
Man, I want to learn that. I just haven't taken the time to do it. But man, that's a killer part. Oh, it's good.
That was a killer part.
Yeah.
Well, man, so you and Debbie, your wife, now this is interesting because when you think about, you know, military, and Eric, you've done a lot of stuff, you know, as a civilian for the military, traveling all over the place with different generals, and but the way that you and Debbie met, I kind of wanted to bring our listeners in, you know, to this, because it was a situation that was really unique. You know, you said she was wondering what took you so long to kind of get your roots back into gospel music. But the way that you guys met, when you think about, you know, patriotism and all that kind of stuff, and how God has a way of healing hearts and bringing, you know, his purpose and his people together at the same time when he wants it done. Tell us a little bit about that story, because it's powerful.
Well, you know, we met, I was playing a show at the Opryland Hotel, and my guitar player and she were friends, and she'd been through a bad time in life, and he talked her into just coming out, just to get out of the house, come hear us play, come meet my buddies, you know. And that's where we actually met. But she's the one that gave me, that really taught me the depth of the sacrifice made by our men and women who serve. Rolling back the clock to 1983, October the 23rd, a terrorist over in, let me back up a little bit. President Reagan sent some of our Marines over to Beirut, Lebanon to be peacekeepers in a very turbulent time. And because they were sent as peacekeepers, the rules of engagement were changed. They couldn't have a weapon chambered. They were sitting ducks over there. And a terrorist came in on a Sunday morning and drove his truckload of explosives. They called it the BLT compound. And it was made like a Embassy Suites Hotel, you know, the big atrium buildings.
Yeah.
And he drove that truck right in the middle of the building and detonated his cargo. And we lost 241 Marines, sailors, and soldiers in that one blast. And Debbie's former husband was one of those who was killed in that bombing. And, you know, everybody thinks that my work with the military is because of my relationship with Mr. Greenwood, but he did introduced me to the military audience. You know, we went on USO tours all around the world, and especially at Christmas, and we just go take a piece of home to those guys and gals serving around the world, and that's some of my favorite memories from my years with him. But I really, even though I had friends in the military, I didn't have what I needed to grasp just how deep it runs, and not just by those who serve, but by their family members. And Debbie really, yeah. I remember when we were dating in October 23rd, she'd never said a word about it to me. And October 23rd rolled around, and boy, she was a different person. She was just really melancholy and just really somber that day. And she explained that to me, and I began to learn more about what took place there. And I started writing some material kind of aimed at that. And the most humbling thing in the world took place. The Beirut families, they have a memorial service every year in Jacksonville, North Carolina, right outside of Camp Lejeune, to remember those lost in the bombing. And those family members, though they didn't have to, they adopted me as part of the Beirut family, and have just embraced me. And I've sung at many of the memorial services. And just this last October was the 40-year anniversary, if you can believe that, of that.
Man,
and, they invited me to come and sing. The motto is "They came in peace," and so I'd written a song 3 or 4 years ago by that title for them, and they invited me to come sing that at the 40-year anniversary. And this year was different. I usually sing, sing with tracks at that kind of thing. They invited me to sing with the Marine Corps band, and I sent the song to them, and they wrote an arrangement of it, and I got to sing that. And of course, God Bless the USA with that band, and it was amazing. Mr. Green would just do that all the time. He'd sing, with all the different military bands, and I'd never gotten to do that. And what a privilege! I mean, it was hard to even get through it, to look at that sea of people out at that memorial, and to think about their loss even 40 years later. They're still grieving that loss, and to see the tears flow, and man, that's hard. That's hard to get through that. But what a privilege!
Yeah, I wrote a song. I don't know how many years ago it's been. It was never cut. I know Sandy Patty almost cut it back into when she did her rendition of the national anthem. I think it was on the Tonight Show. Uh-huh. That's kind of how her career got launched. And I had written this and I had pitched it to her. And I need to play it for you sometime because maybe it's something you can use. I know you write almost all your own stuff, but it was called Still Waving. And when you see people with the flags. But the chorus was, "And I will still be waving the next time I see your face. The tears will turn to laughter, our pain redeemed by grace. So for now we'll say a goodbye, for tomorrow we'll say hello, and I will still be waving the next time I see your face."
Oh, that's awesome.
And and when you think about the sacrifice, we don't see the depth of it. We see someone coming back, like what happened, unfortunately, like with Afghanistan, with the withdrawal and all that mess and everything that happened. And you see those brave soldiers coming back, not the way that they had hoped to come home, but the families, the things that happened for decades. You're telling us about Debbie now and how, when that anniversary rolls around, how somber she becomes. It doesn't just go away. I mean, it's for a lifetime.
It is. We have a ministry at Fort Campbell, Kentucky that we do every year called Operation Tankful of Love. And the whole thing about it, I was looking for something to do for them that didn't revolve around me in any shape, form, or fashion, just something that was tangible and real that we could do for the military family. And so I got a bunch of churches involved, and we take over a truck stop on a Saturday in September. And we give away, probably in a day's time, $30,000 to $40,000 worth of free gas. And every soldier that comes through gets a gift bag where the gospel is presented. And a couple of years ago, of course, we had to fight our way through COVID. We had to kind of change how we were doing things. And in 20, we didn't even get to do it because they were shutting the state down. But the first year back at it in 21, there was a young man. And my volunteers are really good to pray with the soldiers. That's how we open the door. We're not heavy-handed with our faith. We just ask, is there anything we can pray with you about? And this young man, I saw one of my volunteers had him pull over and talking to him for about an hour. And so I thought, I better go over and see what's going on. And this young man was just distraught because he was on the last plane out of Afghanistan. He knew how many were left behind. He knew why they were left behind, and it was eating him alive. So we were really able to really minister to him. And he has been back since and has become one of our dear friends, you know. And here's the cool, one of the coolest parts about that is I asked him, I said, son, where'd you do your basic training? He said, Fort Jackson. I said, really? That's where we did all our ministry stuff. And I said, what year did you graduate? And he told me, I said, if I were to call out your, I asked him if he remembered the motto from his training battalion. Of course he didn't. I said, if I call it out, would you remember it? And he said, maybe. And I said, 40 rounds. And his eyes lit up. He said, that was it. And I said, do you remember when you graduated, this guy came and did a concert for you? And you, he said, yeah, we got pizza and pop and candy. And this guy sang Lean On Me. And I said, well, you're looking at that guy. Full circle, man. How cool is that? But, then we got to have a second encounter with him, you know, and God just put that together. And to kind of help him get to a better place with his anguish over what he knew took place. And so,
you know, I know you have a huge heart for the military, and to be able to travel, I got to do a little bit, nothing like what you did. I got to go a few places to sing for the military, but one of my best memories was I was in Panmunjom, at the DMZ right there between North and South Korea. Mm-hmm. And we were supposed to be doing a concert, and an Abrams ran over the sound snake. Cut that sucker right in half. I mean, so we had to get postponed and be able to go to town. They had to get some more stuff and bring it all back. And so we got to go on like some Hummers and stuff and do like the, not like an obstacle course, but we came back just covered, you know, in dirt and everything. Luckily, we weren't doing a show. But the coolest thing was we got to go right up there to the main building at the DMZ where, you know, usually don't ever get a chance to go to that thing.
Yeah.
And I go inside and I'm standing, I'm seeing, and then, and when you're there, you look across to the opposite side, the North Korea side from where we were on South Korea. And whoever had a flag they would put up, the other side had to put a bigger flag up.
Yes.
You know, they always had to try to outdo each other.
Yep.
So I was kind of watching, and they were telling me how this happens. And I'm looking out the window of this building, and I see this North Korean soldier who was probably about 6'2", which is very tall. For North Korean, because they're putting some of their tallest people right there, and one of the United Nations soldiers who was from the U.S., I think it was a colonel I was with, he just kind of looked over and he pointed at him, and he walked around the building because that guy was kind of staring down us and everything, kind of trying to intimidate, right?
Yep.
And this soldier, he was about 6'8", he was huge, and he walked out, and outside the building, they came face to face, and they did a stare down. And I mean, it was just like face to face. And when he was done and that North Korean soldier turned and walked away, that UN soldier, that US guy just kind of looked at us and went, walked away. That's all he had to do was just like, I've done that, man.
I've looked those guards in the eye, and that's pretty sobering. It really is.
And when, I remember the sniper in the tower I was talking to, he'd see people on the other hillside, and I'd say, you know, how far could you, if you had to? And he pointed to some of these people over there, you know, picking some stuff, and he just kind of looked at me and went, that's crazy. You know, I hope you never have to do something like that, but
yeah,
that's
absolutely
pretty nuts.
Yeah, it is. Well, we don't hear over here about stuff, that, especially in Korea. You know, there's certain people get lost every year over there, you know, that sniper fire, and we don't hear about it. Here, when we would do a USO tour over there, either it never happened on the day we were there, but at every base we went to, either the day before or the day after we left, the front gate would get firebombed or some kind of craziness. And just stuff happens every day that we just don't hear a word about over here.
And I remember being on the bus, we were going from East to West Germany before the wall came down, and they would come on, they'd take your passport and try to intimidate you as much as they could, and you look and you see the guard dogs and the gun towers. I mean, this is a long time ago.
Yeah.
It's, you know, thank you. I just want to say thank you to all you out there who have served in the U.S. military. We appreciate your service, and just know that we do pray for you. And, as we kind of wrap things up today, you know, I think the main thing that I think about in the power of Eric, since we were in college together, how many lives, like that guy with, that Lean On Me, he was like, hey, we did that song. Well, that was me. You're looking at him. How many lives you, me, those of us that are out there in ministry and in music ministry have had a chance to be able to reach out to and touch. And music is an incredibly powerful hope giver, courage giver, healer.
Yeah.
And, buddy, if you would, I don't know if there's anything you would want to say to kind of wrap up where we're kind of headed and what God has done in your life that would lead into this song. But, man, would you do us the honor of doing that and then singing at the end?
Yeah. You know, we talk a lot in our worship services, whenever, especially whenever we're headed to a time of invitation, about God's faithfulness. You know, he was so faithful in our military ministry to put just, it was amazing when we were doing those chapel services to see volunteers that were there with me who had been through certain things and watch the Lord just match them right up with that soldier who had been right where they had been. You know, just the perfect marriage there to get, you know, get them the help they needed. And as I told you earlier, when I would give a invitation, there was, you know, 60, 70, sometimes 80 soldiers that would come. And to be able to just, you know, sit down, I really felt like I had more freedom than the chaplains did, because they would say things to us that they might not say to the chaplains, you know. God was just faithful to let us do that, and to see so many of them come to the saving knowledge of Him before they left, before they went over and got into harm's way. And, you know, the hardest part of that job for me was we'd get word, you know, because some of the soldiers would stay in touch with us. And the hardest part was to hear from their family members that they'd been lost on the battlefield. And that happened numerous times. But it also, you know, just let me know, hey, you had the chance to tell them about Jesus before they left here. And you just hope and pray that something happened in their life, that transformation, that salvation that they desperately needed. So let me just share this song that I know this song means a lot to you, and it does to me as well. That speaks to God's faithfulness, and it was one of the early songs from our old buddy Stephen Curtis Chapman. I think today it's still one of the strongest things he's ever written and put out there. Looking back on this road I've traveled, I see so many times He's carried me through. And if there's one thing that I've learned in my life, my Redeemer is faithful and true. My Redeemer is faithful and true. Everything He has said He will do. Every morning His mercies are new. My Redeemer is faithful and true. My heart rejoices when I read the promise. There is a place that I'm preparing for you. Know someday I'll see my Lord face to face. My Redeemer is faithful and true. My Redeemer is faithful and true. Everything He has said He will do. And every morning His mercies are new. My Redeemer is faithful and true. And in every situation, He has proved His love for me. When I lack the understanding, He gives more grace to me. As my Redeemer, He's faithful and true. Everything He said He will do. And every morning His mercies are new. My Redeemer is faithful and true. Jesus is faithful and true.
Oh, I mean, there's a part of me that wants to just say, we'll see you next time, but I just want to come up with this thing at the end. Every one of you out there who's listening to this, whether you have the gift of music, the gift of speaking, the gift of coming alongside someone with your hands, whatever those things are, your strength is needed. And when we are faithful to what God has given us, because we know He's been true, it changes lives. Like Eric's been talking about, seeing so many lives in the military change, and everyone that he's had a chance to reach out to. You know, I was thinking as we were singing, I was looking at my shirt. You can't probably see it, but it says when you sit with warriors, the conversation is different.
Yeah.
And I hope today that what you heard is a man who is incredibly talented and could be doing anything he wanted to with his music, but he followed the call because God is faithful and true, and He's going to be the same way with you. So, man, I just want to just kind of end this one with say, God, thank you. Thank you for this chance to be able to speak to you and use the gift we have of being able to do this podcast and the technical side with Eric and our guest today with Eric Horner. Is he's just giving you the glory with everything he's done with his life, not just with his music, but it's a reflection of that, how you take those ashes in our lives when we make a mess of them and you make something beautiful out of it. And he will do the same thing with everybody. So I just pray that you'll allow him to be faithful and true in your life, that you'll keep your eyes focused on him. Your strength is needed. We'll see you next time.